Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Maria Chesla is an almost 23-year survivor of stage 1 epithelial ovarian cancer who was unexpectedly diagnosed at age 51. Nearly 9 years after finishing treatment, Chesla got a letter from a family member in Europe informing her that multiple relatives had ovarian cancer. This led Chesla and her family to do genetic testing, which revealed that she and her daughter, Alex Cornwell, were both carriers of the BRCA1 mutation. In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, Chesla and Cornwell share their stories and offer advice for others in the same position. Maria, could you start off by telling me about your cancer journey?
Sure. I am gratefully and blessedly almost a 23-year survivor of stage 1A epithelial ovarian cancer, which is the most common of the 35 ovarian cancers that are around. In the summer of 1998, Alex was a teenager still living at home, as was one of her brothers. And I was having a very difficult time, which I attributed to menopause because I was 51 years old. I was not eating much. I was actually losing weight, but my girth was growing. I remember I had one pair of slacks that fit me. My menstrual periods were so heavy that often at night, several times, I had to change the sheets with my husband. I alternated between diarrhea and constipation, more frequent urination than usual for a 51-year-old woman, and just totally out of sorts. So I was dealing with this thinking it was menopause. And in early October of that year of 1998, our son that was living at home said, "Mom, don't be offended, but you look like you're pregnant." And I did. So I said, "That's it." I called my husband and told him I was going to call our primary doctor. And he was able to see me the same day. And he did examine me. And he said, "There is something going on, but I don't want to venture a guess at this point. But I'm going to have you go in for a CT scan. But I also want you to see your gynecologist," whom I was still seeing on a once-a-year basis, just for a check. In the ovarian cancer world, the blood marker for ovarian cancer is called a CA-125. And my gynecologist did do the CA-125, which was a 56. 0 to 35 is normal. Anything over 35, you can get into the hundreds and even into the thousands, unfortunately. There is some suspicion going on. Mine was 56. So he wasn't sure what he was dealing with, but he felt that I should be referred to a subspecialist called a gynecologic oncologist, which I was. So I did have the CT scan. It showed a large cyst on my left ovary. And in the notes of the CT scan, it said ovarian cancer is suspected. But I sort of blew it off. I really didn't know much about ovarian cancer, except that Gilda Radner had ovarian cancer. And I liked her very much. So that's what I knew. So that from the time that I saw my primary doctor until I actually had surgery with the gynecologic oncologist and also with the gynecologist in the operating room was 3 weeks. And it seems like a long time, but it really isn't, because unfortunately, there are girls and women who are carrying ovarian cancer who are seen and seen and seen over and over again. It could be 5 or 6 months. It could be a year. And by the time they're finally diagnosed correctly, they are in later stages. So I was very, very fortunate. So they removed the cyst and it was a perfect cyst. It had not burst. Nothing had happened. And the gynecologist left the room, the operating theater, but they called him back in when they opened up the cyst and found the ovarian cancer. So he came back in. He did the complete staging and washing and biopsies. I did have a complete hysterectomy and an oophorectomy, which is removing the omentum, which is a primitive sheath that women have in their bodies. And at that point, the gynecologic oncologist told my husband after the surgery that it was no doubt a 1A epithelial ovarian cancer, but the testing would confirm it, which it did. So I had a chance to walk out of the hospital after surgery and have an 85% risk of no recurrence because it was so early on, or I could have 4 rounds of chemotherapy, one every 3 weeks, which I chose to do. And I had almost a 95% chance of no recurrence. So of course I took that chance. It was a little rough. I recovered well. And the day of my surgery, our daughter who lives out of state, I had told the children not to worry and not to come in. Looked up the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition, which was just a young organization at that point. After I finished my chemo, I became active in NOCC, which I'll refer to, and I was the Illinois chapter president, and then I was national president. Very grateful to be here almost 23 years later, and I hope I'm paying it forward.
And so what led you to do genetic testing?
Almost 9 years after the surgery, and I have to remind myself that I was considered a sporadic case of ovarian cancer, which means there was no definitive source of the ovarian cancer. But about 9 years into this, I received a letter from my cousin in Europe that not only she was dealing with her second, this is a paternal cousin, not only was she dealing with a second round of ovarian cancer, but her niece also was, and my elderly aunt had probably passed away from ovarian cancer, but they weren't as diligent with the elderly people as they are now, more diligent. And so I called my gynecologic oncologist, who I was still seeing once a year, and he said, oh my goodness, he said, now the puzzle fits why you got ovarian cancer. So I scheduled an appointment with the medical geneticist in the hospital where I was operated on and treated. And the results came back a few weeks later that I was a BRCA1, BRCA1 genetic mutation carrier. Doctor told me at the time, the geneticist told me that there's a good chance that some of my family is carrying it. So she suggested that they all be tested. At this point, Alex, her older sister, myself, my brother, and his daughter all carry the BRCA1 mutation. So right now, there's the five of us carrying the BRCA1 mutation from my father's side of the family.
What were both of your initial reactions when you found out that you carried the BRCA mutation, and what were the next steps that you took?
Well, just as I had studied about ovarian cancer and learned so much about it, I quickly learned about the BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutations. I was not worried. As Alex will tell you, I presented it to my daughters and to our sons very positively that this is not a death sentence. It's an awareness that we have, that we all are carrying. Just as I like delving into things and learning something new every day, this is how I felt about being diagnosed with the BRCA1 mutation.
Yeah, and I was younger, 27, when I decided to get tested. I think it was a year or two after mom had found her results. And so I, again, very positive about it, that this was a information. It felt powerful. It felt like this was a tool I had to remain as healthy as I possibly could. And so for me, at the age of 27, knowing that I still wanted to have children and start a family, I went the route of finding a practice, a gynecological practice that was very proactive in monitoring for the BRCA mutations. And so I started on a every 6 month cycle of either a mammogram or breast MRI every 6 months, and then doing a transvaginal ultrasound and CA125 every 6 months. Now there continues to be changes in the field of detecting ovarian cancer, which is really much harder to do than it is to be proactive about detecting breast cancer. So, you know, not every practice will recommend a CA125, but if you do go to like a high-risk clinic or to a practice that's really proactive, they'll still do that. So that was my initial, I did that for about 10 years, doing the monitoring in between having children. And then when I turned 38. So about a year and a half ago, I decided to have a prophylactic double mastectomy with reconstruction. And then just this past March, had my prophylactic oophorectomy and hysterectomy to reduce the risk of ovarian cancer. So I've gone through both of the preventative surgeries at this point.
And I also, at 60, which was old by the standards for prophylactic surgery, surgery from BRCA 1 and 2, had a prophylactic bilateral mastectomy, a double mastectomy with implants done. And I've been great ever since. My choice was I felt I needed the implants and I've had no trouble with them whatsoever.
Alex, you are now a mother yourself. So what advice would you have for anyone that has just found out that they are a carrier of the BRCA mutation and they're thinking about motherhood and what it might mean for their children?
Yes. I'll preface all of this by saying that everybody's journey with this mutation is their own. And so the best advice I can give is to just connect with people, because there's going to be all sorts of people who have done the journey different ways. And so that'll help you to gain perspective on what feels right for you. And it also is about the personal experience you've had with cancer, you know, whether you've lost a mother, sister, aunt, you know, how bad their battles were with cancer can really define how you go about your journey. So for me, it was connecting with organizations like Bright Pink, or FORCE, joining Facebook groups of women that have the BRCA mutation, where you can sort of, you know, ask questions and say, hey, you know, how do you deal with this? Or how did you decide to do that? Finding a doctor, gynecologist, or a high risk doctor who's going to monitor you. And so you're kind of getting a very educated information and then comparing it to what works for you in your life. You know, I would suggest not to be scared about passing it on to your kids. You know, thankfully, there are preventative measures you can do, lots of monitoring, especially for breast cancer, that you can do. And so, you know, there are ways to take the power back from having this mutation and giving it, you know, to yourself to make those decisions. And so for me, I didn't question having children at all. That may, somebody may, but for me, I knew that there were steps to take to reduce your risk. And so for me, you know, having children definitely outweighed passing that risk on. And so, you know, that's the advice, is to just gain as much perspective, listen to other people's stories, go find a counselor, a therapist that you can talk through the pros and cons of everything with to help you make that decision. That was really helpful to me.
So what is something that maybe both of you wish you knew before your experiences?
Well, for me, I remember as sitting with the family about a year before I was diagnosed, saying that if I ever developed any cancer, I probably would not have chemotherapy. But that changes almost immediately when you are faced with the prospect of survivorship. And so I wish that I had known a little more about my family history, but most of them living in Europe, because my parents and I were immigrants when I was a baby. I did not know them as well as I probably should have, but that's different here now with our family. Our family is quite well aware of this. I think the most important thing is there's two things. One of them is to be your own best advocate. You'll have loved ones with you, but you are the one that has to be the best advocate. And this sounds very trite, but you have to educate yourself the best you can and remain as positive as you can. And I feel that that has helped me in this journey.
I feel very grateful that my mom is such an open person. And so right from the start of all of this, I've had sort of her journey to follow and be very open about it and advocate and talk about these things with people. And I realize that's not right for everybody. Some people are very personal about their health and different things. And so whatever feels right to you is the right thing to do. But there's not a lot I can say that I wish I had known prior, but there's certainly still, you know, a lot of information out there to have. So for me, the knowledge has been extremely helpful and empowering.
A lot more than before when I was first diagnosed. So many more advances, which I'm very grateful for. And sometimes it's hard to keep up with everything, which is a good thing. Alex and I probably should be tested again genetically, because there's so many variants now within the genetic testing of BRCA 1 and 2.
So can you guys tell me about the virtual mentoring and the online support groups and all the work that you do to help other people?
The first and dearest to my heart, which was not long after I finished chemotherapy, and it looked like things were going to be okay at that point, I started a non-medical peer-to-peer support, and it sort of grew like Topsy, like they say. And someone would call and say, you know, Maria, a friend of mine or my sister is just been been diagnosed with ovarian cancer. Do you think you could talk to her? Because you've been so positive and you got through this as really well. Could you do that? I mentioned earlier that I got active in NOCC Illinois and then NOCC National, and they're growing by leaps and bounds. Alex and I yearly speak to first-year medical students at Rosalind Franklin Medical School and University of Health Sciences in Northern Illinois. I have been speaking once a year about 19 years, and about 9 years ago, Alex joined me, and the students really relate well to Alex. I think they appreciate what I have to say, which is encouraging them to listen to your patients when the time comes, and Alex really relates well to them. So I speak about the cancer journey, and Alex speaks about living with me during that journey, and also with the BRCA1 genetic mutation. Last year, I was part of a pilot program with ANCAN, which is Answer Cancer. They had not had an ovarian cancer support group, so I was asked to be one of the moderators. And as NOCC National was able to develop more programs like Teal Hearts and Stage 4 Survivors, chat rooms for them, early ovarian cancer patients in their teens, 20s, and 30s. And so we were no longer part of ANCAN, but one of the things that NOCC is going to be developing, even though it's starting in NOCC, Illinois, it will be a chat room for long-term survivors like myself. So I'm looking forward to that beginning. And of course, because of that, Alex and I were asked to get involved with Merck Pharmaceuticals, yourcancerstory.com. They had focused on several other cancers, but had not yet focused on ovarian cancer. They asked if we could get involved with your story, yourcancerstory.com. And that has been a wonderful experience for us. And what they do with Your Cancer Story is they offer support and information from the time you were diagnosed until your survivorship.
And I'll add that with the Your Cancer Story as well, there's also supports and resources for caregivers, family members of those who are experiencing and have survived cancer.
This whole experience, how has it changed your outlooks on life?
For me, it's about what can I do? What are the choices I can make to remain as healthy as possible? And of course, there are things that are out of our control day in and day out. And so when you have information and you have a little bit of control and you can make these decisions ahead of time are really, really important and impactful. To see my mom go through her chemotherapy treatments, the long-term effects from that and the short and long-term effects of it, really you say, okay, that's, you know, I can withstand having these surgeries that take months to recover from fully in order to prevent going through something like that. And so to see, you know, my mom's journey and know that I have a little bit of knowledge to prevent that is really empowering. And then also the positive outlook that my mom has had through all of this also then makes me feel like, you know, that if something were to happen, that I'm in the driver's seat, that I can make these decisions. I can advocate for myself. I can stay informed. I know what the top treatments are and all of that. And so that is how it has affected my outlook is I feel more knowledgeable, more empowered.
I am grateful. I've sort of been a volunteer most of my life. And to me, this is probably the most significant volunteerism that I have ever done. I'd like to think I made a difference for some people. One of the most interesting stories in my journey is that my college roommate also developed a very rare chemo-resistant ovarian cancer. And she wasn't really happy with the gynecologic oncologist that she was seeing. So obviously we had been talking and she asked if I thought that she could come to the practice of my gynecologic oncologist because I was always raving about him. And sure enough, he took her on as a patient. She's still doing well. She's about in her 16th or 17th year and has not had chemotherapy for that particular cancer because it is chemo resistant. So, I mean, I'm not sure there's too many cases like that, but I think my sense of advocacy grew and the fact that I've got my family behind me made me get through this a lot easier, a lot quicker than I thought I would. And to see that Alex is willing to carry on, as is my older daughter, do the same, just fills my heart with so much pride and joy, really.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.